Do you know, don't tell Pastor Herb, it doesn't have to come from him. God can speak to us through regular, ordinary, extraordinary people as well. And so that's what we're going to hear today. Our first speaker is Mike Reichel. Pastor Herb asked Mike, he's not up there, but he will be, as one of New Song's leaders, to accompany him to attend the Global Leadership Summit in August. Now, Mike has been a part of New Song for 8 years, and he serves on the, he's a member of the governance board. Mike has a heart for investing in others' lives using his gifts and leadership. Mike recorded his message, actually, because he's been taking his dad to his dad's church on Sunday mornings, and that's why we have not seen him. And so let's hear what Mike has to say and how God worked through him in this global conference.
Last month, Pastor Herb invited me to attend the Global Leadership Summit with him. That two-day summit was packed with motivational speakers from an assortment of backgrounds, and from pastors to entrepreneurs, and we even listened to corporate CEOs and individual who was once trapped by a traffic sex slave. I enjoyed listening to the speakers, and I think I received a lot of inspiration. But if you ever go anywhere with Pastor Herb, beware, you'll be asked to speak. Pastor asked me what was the one insight that I took away from the event. It didn't take long for me for a reply. There was one phrase that permeated every message, and that was, everyone has influence. Primarily, the leadership summit was focused on what makes a leader, what leadership means, the characteristics of leadership, and how to lead, and the impact the leader has on community, business, and family. But there remained one consistent message from every speaker, and that was, you have influence. And that's the one aspect that I want to pass on to you. You may not consider yourself a leader, but you are, because you do have influence. It doesn't matter if you're a student, a CEO, or a pastor, or a parent. It doesn't matter if you're a person who is always busy or a couch potato. You have influence. You're being watched by others, and others are learning from your actions. And by virtue of that, you have influence, and by default, you are a leader. And without influence, you cannot lead, and if you lead, you have influence. I want to show you a 48-second clip of the Global Leadership Summit. It's a promotional, and afterwards, I'm going to ask you some questions. I don't know if you recall, but the opening screen of that promotional was, you have influence. So it made it easy for me to understand what the pastor wanted or what I should be speaking on. You have influence is actually at the very core of leadership. Let's flip to the section where it got interrupted at the end of the promotional. And that particular one, it says, it has emphasis in the middle of the screen. It has three words. Those three words are, your leadership matters. And I want to emphasize just one word in that phrase, saying it three times. When I emphasize the one word, it does have different meanings to it. Listen to this. Your leadership matters. Let's change that. Your leadership matters. And then finally, your leadership matters. The emphasis changes slightly and has a little bit of different meaning for us. Now, I don't know if you're any corporate CEOs here at New Song, but I do know that there are some parents here, and you need to be the leader in your family. Now, the question is, what do you project on others? Do you lead with integrity, purpose, and hope? You know, my time is short here, so I want to leave you with one last thought. It is said that there are two kinds of people. There are those whom you are glad that walk into the room, and then there are those whom you are glad to see leave. Since all of us have influence, the influence you have will either push people to acceptance or rejection of what you stand for. So I'll ask you a question that I asked myself after going to this conference. What kind of influence are you projecting? Because it does matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. That was awesome. Next up, we have Nancy Seaman. Nancy. There she is. Okay. She's coming. Nancy has been part of New Song for 7 years and currently serves on the leadership team, heading up the fellowship team, which was the picnic, right? And that was an awesome picnic. God has given her a gift and heart for writing. Pastor Herb asked Nancy to share a bit of her writing that reveals some of God's work in her life.
Pastor asked if I'd talk for 5 to 7 minutes, you know, about what I've been up to. So, long story short, there ain't nothing short about this story. So, Jeff, you have to let me know when 5 minutes are up because I'm going to go to Shannon. So, I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to reduce 56 years into a book. I don't know how to reduce 40 pages into 5 minutes. So this thought, I thought I was prepared. I had everything, you know, but I'm out of my comfort zone. You know, it's like, how do you do it? How do you reduce it? You know, I could stand here and ramble, you know, or I could follow God's lead. Truth is, I don't know why I'm up here. Thoughts are running through my mind this morning when I got up and I put mascara on. The question was, why? I lied. I do. I know it's not about me. If it was about me, just call me Moses, because I feel inadequate. Christ alone, cornerstone, weak made strong in the Savior's love, through the storm, his love. He is Lord. He is Lord of all. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a social worker, grief counselor, life coach. And at the end of my name, I don't have the initials PhD, PsyD, MA, MS, MC, LC, SW. However, I have 56 years of experience with grieving. The only initials I have behind my name are OLD and COG. Jeremiah 29:11. I've been journaling for 40 years. If it's written in black and white, It's written in black and white, but if it's what Jesus said, it is written in red. Jeremiah 29:11. I have been writing for 40 years. Here's the plan. I don't know the plan. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. But I don't know the plan. But this is his plan. All the cutesy little journals I have are blank inside. This is what I call my, how many inches? My 74 and a half inches insignificant memories. So I've been putting them together since 1981. I didn't know I was to write. I thought I was to write in 1981, but then I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. So in 1989, I met with a counselor at CCAC and gave him a little bit of my story, and he told me, and it wasn't the first time, that your life is a story waiting to be written. And I just brushed that off, and I took my signed up for English comp class, and my professor on my third paper wrote, is there a potential call of God on your life to write? So that was what happened in 1979. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, but like Forrest Gump, ran, I wrote. So, what's up? That's what's up. I heard a pastor on the radio say there's no room in our life for sarcasm. Ah, shucks. I gotta mull that one over. Lucy is the one who opened Pandora's box. Lucy said, good grief, Charlie Brown. I pondered, maybe I do need psychiatric help, and the price is right. Lucy's emphatic statement sent me on a journey to know. Is it true? Can grief be good? So what's up? I suppose that's God's way of saying what's up. God and I are writing a book. So now I'm kicking Lucy out of her cardboard box and we're taking over. God is calling me to bring the darkness to life, to be an encouragement to others who are grieving. Who are they? Who are these people? Last year I said, God, what's going on? My version of what's up, I suppose. Grief is not about death, it's about loss. It took a virus to understand the words that I hear. Everyone is grieving. Everyone is trying to survive. I read, write, and think about grief and death and dying all the time. But there's no need to worry because I belong to the I Look It Up Club. When I hear your story, if your spirit sag, and I may be the first one to ask, have you considered you are grieving? There's an elephant in the room. His name is grief, and he's looking for a new name. I want to open up that grief conversation. So I'll read a little bit of what I wrote. Chapter 1, The End. Chapter 2. When I wrote the first chapter, I thought it was easy. I can do this. But then I wrote the chapter called The Masquerade, and Tony challenged me, saying she didn't believe I entirely removed my mask. Oh, I accepted the challenge. That night from 1 to 4 in the morning, the conversation went like this. Lord, pull up a chair. It's going to be a long night, so let's start from the beginning. That's where he stopped me dead in my tracks, and he said, that is where you are wrong. Start from the end, because that is where hope lies. So as far as this book is concerned, I want to convey hope is for those who keep holding on. It's amazing. I can see now how easy it is for somebody to write a book in 30 days. I must be doing something wrong when the pastor said there's no room for sarcasm, because sarcasm is my love language. So when you talk about grief, when you live a life of grief, you don't always have joy, you know, but God has brought joy in the morning. With that joy, I have to sneak in my sarcasm. I have to laugh, because that's where the hope is, because God wants us to be joyful. He gives us a life. He gives us to help others. It's not about me. Everything that's in the journals is not about me. It's about God and giving him glory. I think back to the lepers, and I think my grief was my leprosy, and I want to be the one to come forward and say, God, I want to give you the praise. I want you to thank you. I want to be the one. So what have I been up to? What began in 1965 became a thought in 1981. A suggestion in 1985 presented itself as a question in 1989. What became a possibility in 2015, an obsession in 2016. Pastor prayed, Lord, whatever we do, let us become obsessed. Whatever you want us to do, let us become obsessed. I'm an obsessed mess, and I blame it on Pastor. My invitation in 2018 has been a challenge ever since. It was after the Whispers class. Hearing God's whispers is something I'm familiar with, but having the guts to do about it, that's another issue. And after the Whispers class, I heard, I forget what I heard. It's in here somewhere. I saved you. I healed you. I protected you and your family. Give me the glory. So what's up? Tony and I were walking through Hobby Lobby and we were looking at signs. She looked at a sign and read aloud, "Don't look back, you're not going that direction." But God in 2018 had me look back again. I've been paboozling. I've been putting together a 25,048-piece puzzle called My Life Story, His Story. It's not easy being me. It's complicated. I made grief complicated for 20 years because I didn't know there was a grief process. The stages of grief are bargaining, denial, anger, depression, and acceptance. I didn't know there was a grief process for 20 years. And I want people to know there is a grief process. How I found out about it is in the chapter. Good grief and all that jazz. It was an unlikely way, but that's the way God works, in unlikely ways and unlikely manners. So what's up? Semanticsmatter.com. That's what's up. It's not about me. It's about us. Hope. It's not about me. It's about people encouraging those to take them to the mountain. I may have been ahead of the game because September 1st, was the 56th anniversary of my mother's passing. So it was important that I put that up there on that date. But what's up? If you click on the middle, Thriving the Mummyhood is what's up. It's coming soon. September 7th. You'll hear more about it. But over the past 5 years of writing, God has moved me from surviving. I was a survivor. I thought surviving was a good place. I was a survivor way before Destiny's Child in the hit series at my daughter's confirmation class. They said, write on a paper something about yourself. And I put, I'm a survivor. But surviving isn't a good place. Surviving's where anger is. Surviving's where you're trying to get through. God moved me from surviving to overcoming to thriving. And so what's up? I'm thriving the griefhood.
You've used your time if that's what you're worried about.
I'm done.
Thank you, Nancy. That touched my heart. Next up, we have Matthew Scott. He's going to talk to us about insights about the learning community. And it says here, Matthew has been a part of New Song since birth. In parentheses, Pastor Herb's shoulder problem started after rocking him as a baby for an hour during a meeting. Something I would not have known. Having been in the New Song family through his formative years and returning after college, Matthew has a unique perspective. He has a quick wit and great mind, which he lends willingly to the life and work of New Song Church. And we hear you on community learning communities, and that is all true. I will attest to that, yes. All right.
Hi, everybody. Some of you just saw me on Friday. Always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for the reason for the hope within you. That sound familiar? We've been doing that memory verse for a long time. Sometimes when we do things for a long time, it's just because we're lazy. But I think that... But I think that memory verse, I think we're keeping it around because it really is a center point of a lot of stuff going on at New Song right now, especially the learning communities. Learning communities gives us the tools to make a defense. When Herb asked me to do this, we were talking on Thursday, and he said, how much have you written for Sunday? I'm like, how would I know? We haven't done learning community this week yet. He's like, oh, but I want you to do it in general. I'm like, it changes every week. But I think what he was getting at is this idea that even though we've done three different studies, we're in the middle of our third study now, it all comes down to that idea of we need to be prepared to make a defense. The learning community, it's different from a Bible study, it's different from a sermon. I've been in many of those in my 20 plus years at New Song, and learning communities, I really do feel that we get insights. People who I've never heard talk in a small group before are really engaged in this, and everybody has a really unique insight that I think brings a lot to the message here at the learning communities. These past few weeks, we've been talking about the idea of the kingdom and the message of God, and we've been talking about it from the perspective of Paul first visiting Philippi in the book of Acts, and then writing a letter to the Philippians later. If Herb was here, he would say, and this is all so, so important to the future of New Song. And it is. Because when you read the book of Philippians, there's a lot of really good advice in there of how to be the church, what it means to cooperate, what it means to live in community, to live as part of the kingdom of God. And when you read a verse that says something like, your citizenship is in heaven, you might not really understand what Paul is getting at there. But Paul, having lived in Philippi, is making a very specific reference there, where everyone who lived in Philippi wasn't just a part of the Roman Empire. They were a citizen of Rome. They were a Roman colony. They were a citizen of Rome. And so once you understand that, that verse in Philippians means something totally different. You have a citizenship in heaven. It means that you are, it's as if you're in heaven already. When you're in Philippi, it's as if you're in Rome already. And Paul says it's the same way. If you believe in Jesus, it's as if you're in heaven already. And just reading the text of Philippians, you could miss that. And at least with this current study, that's what we're honing in on. We're honing in on that. Some would call it a historical perspective, but it's deeper than that. It's a perspective on what does Paul want us to get away from that? Because if you don't take just a little bit to think about where Paul was coming from and who he was writing to, you can miss those really important details. Because I don't know if you can think about that for a second. If you are a colony of heaven, is that not the best news since the cross? And you could skip right by that. Also in Philippians, Paul writes about the idea of bickering in the church. And during the time he was writing the letter to the Philippians, there was bickering in the Philippian church. And he wrote, agree in the Lord. And he said, he brought up this image of struggling together. He said, why are you bickering when you have struggled together? And the Greek word he uses is the same Greek word you would use to describe gladiators in the arena. And so, again, you would read that verse and you would understand what Paul is saying. You'd understand the context of why would you bicker with each other when you struggle together. That makes sense to us. But it means something totally different when it says, why would you bicker with each other when you have fought together in the arena against lions? When you have fought back to back with lions surrounding you, and then you're going to sit here and bicker. Which totally puts it in a new perspective. And so, Herb wants me to come up here, and anybody who isn't coming to Learning Communities, that's what you're missing out on. You're missing out on not just those little insights, but big insights, things that really do recontextualize big parts of our faith. So I know a lot of you are coming, but if anybody isn't coming, Herb really wants you to come, and I think you'd really enjoy it. So that's all.
I have really enjoyed learning communities and how much each of our experiences lends to the discussion and what I'm coming away with. It's an excellent thing, and so I highly recommend it as well. Our final speaker is Ashley Rossi. Ashley is relatively new to this church. She's joined us about a year ago in the middle of a pandemic. That's kind of crazy. Everybody was staying home, and you joined New Song. That's right. That's awesome.
You know, I would have came sooner, but I thought all the churches were closed.
Ah. But she did quickly jump into the activities of New Song, and she recently started lending her gifts and abilities to help others get healthy. God did a wonderful work in Ashley's life to draw her to himself, and she's going to share with us how that all happened.
Hello. All right. So I'll give you a little background how I grew up. I grew up Catholic, very Catholic. Would say the rosary with my grandma. Went to Catholic school up till eighth grade, then went to public high school. So I, followed all the Catholic rules and rituals, but I didn't have a relationship with Christ. I didn't. Know what he wanted for me, right? I thought if I went to confession, I said the rosary, I was right in God's eyes. And it was about, I would feel good then, right? I could feel good about myself because I did what I thought was right when I was just living completely in the flesh with no real truth. And so that was kind of the beginning stages of my life. And then I got really into I got into wanting to have fun, like partying. And, you know, that led me to move to Vegas. And I stayed out there a year and a half and got really deep into sin, into darkness. And there, it was just, my life was black. It was so dark. And I hated Vegas. And I ended up coming home and, you know, getting worse when I came home. And I grew up in Youngstown, and that's where I first moved back to. And then I came to Pittsburgh, and it got even darker. So, you know, they say what stays in Vegas, but you know, what you do in Vegas, it doesn't. You take it all home with you. And once you let the devil in, he just brings all his friends. And it was just, I was in total sin. And at that time, I loved it. I thought that I was living and I was free and I was in bondage. I was in chains. And, you know, everything, I was living the complete opposite of a godly life. Everything. It was dark. And, I bounced around house to house. I throw stuff in a garbage bag and go to the next place. I mean, it was just chaos. It was chaotic. And there are times that only by God I survived. Because if I would have died in those moments, I would have went straight to hell. And that was the reality of what my life was. And I remember, like, and this was a solid 10 years of darkness. So it wasn't like, you know, I had a year of part. It was a solid 10 years of just dark. Each time it got darker and darker. At one point, I got into New Age. I was doing tarot card readings. It was so dark and so bad. And I remember sitting on the couch one day, and I felt like all the light had just completely left me. And this is Christ saved me in 2017. And man, I wish I could just show you like a movie of everything. I mean, everything that I thought I loved, right? Like going out, partying, I hated. I ended up hating it because Christ changed my heart. I opened my Bible and he revealed his word to me. Like I understood what the scriptures were saying, what his words were saying. And everything that I thought I loved, I hated. I grieved my sin. Every part of it changed. My heart changed. And like when I think about that, and there are times I'm driving in my car and those memories flood back, or I see something that reminds me of something, right? Of a dark time. And I shudder and I just thank God. I repent and I thank God for saving me. I didn't deserve it. And he saved me. And he made me free. And, you know, all the anger that was inside me, all of that was like, he healed my heart. I mean, and he just keeps teaching me and I keep growing in him. And I'm so thankful. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
And, in the midst of just everything Christ did. And, you know, I know I'm kind of all over the place. And in that, like, I remember reading and everything that he detested, that's who I used to be. That's who I was. And I'm like, wow, like, you're so merciful. There's so much grace. Like, you wash me clean. You don't even see me like that anymore. And I was just so thankful. And I remember falling to my knees and, you know, repenting and thanking him and just, you know, he gave me everything. And then in all of this, I have always wanted a father. Like I always wanted a dad. I mean, when I was a little kid, I would dream of, you know, having a good dad. But when I learned, when Christ showed me, when he saved me, he showed me what a real father is. And that ended up being the greatest blessing, something that I thought was like so bad in my life, not having like a good dad, was ended up being the greatest blessing because Christ showed me what a real father is and what, you know, what a true father is. And that's who I go to for advice, for counsel. I mean, it's, I go to Christ because he's my father. I mean, he's my everything. And so in that, in this, like, I think about sometimes the people that, that don't get out of that life. And you know, it breaks my heart because, you know, I'm so thankful that he gave me life and showed me what, you know, living is. And you know, it's funny, but not like funny, haha, but like amazing. I mean, I used to wake up and as soon as my eyes would open, I would feed whatever sin I was feeding. And now I wake up and I pray and I open my Bible. And I mean, that doesn't happen through because you want to change. He changed me completely. And I'm just so thankful. And I'm so thankful he brought me here to New Song because I was looking for a church and I'd go and I'm like, I just don't feel it. So, before I came here, I'm like, if this is the church, God, tell me, like, just let me know. And when I came in and just, I felt the Holy Spirit work. And guess when I first came back to church, and this was not like, I didn't think about this. I came in, I sat down and I looked up on the screen and it said, Happy Father's Day. And I'm like, wow, what a day to come to church. So, you know, it was celebrating my father. But yeah, so that's my story. And, you know, it was 10 years. And if anybody has any questions or wants to know anything, I would, you know, definitely share with you guys. So thank you.
So here we go. There once was a strong man at a circus sideshow who demonstrated his power before large audiences every night. Toward the end of one of his performances, he squeezed the juice out of a lemon between his hands. And then he said to onlookers, I will offer $200 to anyone here who can squeeze another drop from this lemon. And this thin little old lady hobbled up on stage. She picked up the lemon, clamped it between her two frail bony hands. She squeezed and a teaspoon of lemon came out of that, a whole teaspoon of lemon juice, yep, with just her two bony hands. The strong man was amazed. He paid her the $200, but then privately he said, I have to know what is the secret of your strength. And she said, practice. I have been treasurer of my church for 42 years. And I can attest to that. Not 42 years. I'm not that old. But I have been there. And treasurers learn how to squeeze that out. And so really the story is give generously. So that poor treasurer doesn't have to work that hard to squeeze lemon out of that juice out of that lemon anymore. If the ushers would come ahead and take the offering.